listener production.
Well, Ham, this is our remembering project.
Yep, where a random day of the year is selected and we look up the run sheets from all our shows from across the years to find any we did on that day.
Over 20 years, that's about 2,500 shows and roughly 26,000 talk breaks. Today, we pick one. One talk break only, and try to remember what happened based on what was written down on the run sheet from that day.
As always, we've got podcast Mike with us here for any technical stuff.
Hello.
Mike, what date was randomly chosen today?
It's November 12th.
Okay then, it's Haim's go. Here's Mike with the sponsorship stuff before we find out what year Haim will take us back to and see if we remember anything from that day.
This is Hamish and Andy's Remembering Project.
And it's my go today. And geez, I find with this show, when you pick, you get given the day.
Yeah.
It's like I imagine in like in a Wild West town during a drought, when you go to the well, you're not sure if there's going to be much water in.
Yeah.
You send the bucket down. You feel it down there. It's hit something. You pull it back up. Mm. What will it have in it?
And probably keeping the analogy going with the Wild West, at different times of year, the well will be fuller.
Yeah, sure. You'll be more confident
that
it's going to get something. Yes. But you're right, as we've talked about before, early on in the year, often just came back and just roll the arm over. Nothing too hard, nothing too fast. But November 12th, you're confident that usually things are amping up around there.
Trying to tie up a lot of loose ends.
In the three-act structure of the year, we're usually at the crescendo or kind of like bringing it home on a big mission with the aim to wrap up, Mike, usually the radio year by about December 5th.
Yep.
And pretend that that was an acceptable level of work to do
for
the year, whilst the rest of Australia's workforce continue up to about December 22nd.
Exactly. And then, Mike, what we would do and what we did was gradually we contracted more holidays.
Yes.
As if you were going to graph it, the show's success also had a similar trajectory to the amount of holidays we were allowed.
Well, actually say it was two similar shapes.
That's true.
But staggered from each other.
Rolling bell curve.
So it was just like time shifted one year to the right. So I was like, well, we were successful last year. Yeah. So now we will increase our level of holidays. But then like, okay, you guys aren't as popular as you used to be. Right. Okay, so we'll decrease the holidays. Well, I guess we have to come back on and do a bit more work.
We used to also argue that no one was back before Australia Day
That was a big argument
so,
we had.
So we, by the end, I think we'd established that December 5th, everyone's pooped radio and go to Christmas broadcasting.
And though they're still going to work and across the breakfast and drive shifts, they don't need to be bothered. Like, let's let people get to the end of the year without interruptions.
And then obviously no one's getting back until after Australia Day.
Yeah.
So pretty much Feb.
Only maniacs would go back to work that early. And, you know, you can't just do the show for maniacs. So ideally we were pushing towards a sort of Feb to November working year.
Yeah.
Obviously plenty of holidays in between.
I swear, like, when I was at uni, there was one year where every third week there was just no podcasts. Like, you just didn't do shows.
It's possible. I mean, there was a year where we didn't come back until June.
Yeah, we took it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we came back mid-year at one point, and then in
bit of a late launch that year,
and then in the next year, I think we also came back a little late.
Might have come back a little
later.
I think
it was more of a March type. Yeah,
March of the not the March of the Penguins, but certainly the March of the lazy radio hosts. But anyway, November 12th. The reason I bring up the bucket was as I pulled it up from the well, it runneth over.
Oh, good.
With all the things that have happened over the years.
Okay.
Some we would remember straight up. Some we might not. Like in 2010, on that day when we did our regular segment, Fred Bassett, you made me dress like a Victoria's Secret model.
Oh, really?
Don't remember that one. This has been an interesting exercise because I just don't remember.
No.
Whole chunks, wholesale months. And you would think that's the sort of the interesting part about our jobs.
Yep.
In most people's lives, if one of the guys had made, usually, I mean, you can speak for everyone, but if one of the guys had made the other guy dress up in lingerie.
Yes.
And I guess you were like snapping my bra and my undies and stuff. Well, you would have.
I mean, I have no idea why you would be doing that.
Well, it was to do Fred Bassett. So in a normal friendship, if someone would go, remember that night you made me dress up in lingerie while I read a cartoon? You'd be like, well,
2010 this?
We remember that night. Yeah, 2010.
Yeah, this makes sense as far as like how thinly veiled the idea would have had to be. You've been doing the segment for so long.
Yeah, probably about 3 years by that.
Coming up with ways to distract Hamish doing it. It used to be, you know, there used to be kind of some logic to it.
Yeah, and by the end it was just like, I'm going to kick you in the shin. I'm going to light you on fire. Hey, we did do a light you on fire one.
I think we did. Yeah.
So it just devolved into like garden variety assault. But anyway, I was like, I don't remember that. And so many of the Fred Bassetts I see come, I'm like, I don't really remember that. There was one where I got like painted or like spray painted, like my body outline against a canvas was like a...
Can't remember that either.
Yeah, I don't remember that. But but it says on the run sheet, like, you know, you've been painted. Here's something, this is not what I want to play today, but in 2008, High School Musical, the movie, was big.
Oh, Vanessa Hudgens came on our show, wasn't it?
I reckon we had Hudgens on.
And the other one that wasn't Efron.
Not Efron. It was the Zac other... Efron, Hudgens and someone else.
And there was another female in there that...
Right.
Sharpay is the character's name, I believe.
That's a good factoid, but it's not helping anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, here's the thing. This wasn't on this day, on the 12th of November 2008. We didn't have any big names on, but what we did dedicate half the show to, again, not something I remembered, was making a High School Musical of our lives, like of stuff that happened to us at high school. And then I think from the run sheet, it appears like we got high school kids to come in and sing it.
Right. Okay. No, don't remember doing that.
Don't remember doing that. Okay. Half a show. So it says like, you know, it's like break one, like, you know, Hamish and Andy discuss the idea, like break two, writing themes, like break three, rehearsals, break four, the musical.
Mm.
And then different, and like the kids come in and we met the kids. Do you remember any of that?
No, don't remember doing that whatsoever. But that happens in the daily.
I feel like I would have known the stories that you would have used in your...
Did I write it for you, or did you write and you write one for me? I mean,
yeah, that would have been a good way to do it.
Yeah,
because then it would have all been about.
Oh, we just would have bagged the
stacks on, but it would have been about like you doing the poo in at cadets and having to cut your undies off.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did poo in his pants on cadet camp, and then he had to cut his undies off.
Didn't have to.
You made the right decision because he also could have just walked around with a poo in his pants. Yeah, the right.
Why'd
decision.
You have to cut them off?
Well, I'd had 12 up boots on, like the boots, and the weird thing was at cadets was you had to ask a corporal or a senior person to take you to the bathroom. So you
by the time
just
you get
go.
To the SAS, they change that rule.
They let you go
if you're on operations.
They let you go.
I think you're just expected to do it in your own time, yeah. Not on the mission.
So to leave camp because the toilet block was a certain way away, you had to leave camp. You had to find a corporal or sergeant, ask them permission, and they would march you, and you would march to the toilet. I'd left my run too late. Couldn't find a corporal or a sergeant. No one wanted to go to the toilet anyway. So
talk to the Minister of Defence. He said, "Look, it's below my pay grade,"
and. The other part of it was on all school camps, you tried to avoid going to the toilet. Like it was just one of those things. So I was holding out as long as possible. I went, oh my gosh, I've mistimed this poorly.
It's gonna go.
And so I found Corporal Peoples.
Fire in the hole.
He marches me there. On the march, I poo my pants.
Yeah.
And I get into...
dishonourable discharge.
and in the cubicle, I'm there going, okay, this can be a change school situation. This could be a change
that's
city.
That's what's on the line. That's what's it's on the line.
City situation. Because if I go out and go, hey, guys, I've pooed my pants, I'm known. I mean, you know,
there is a reason there is a saying that shit sticks. because that is on your social record forever.
Yeah.
Mike, did you poo your pants or know anyone that did at high school?
There was a guy in grade six camp who pooed his pants.
And you remember.
I'm not going to say his name, but he knows.
Yeah.
He knows who he is.
So I'm sitting there and I've got to unlace the boots.
Too long.
And Corporal Peebles is out front. To unlace all the boots, take off all the... I was like, this is hard. And it's just sitting in my dacks, in my undies. And back then I wasn't a boxer shorts guy. I was an underwear guy.
No, thank God.
And thank goodness.
But this is the era where silky Davenports were the were the underpant of choice. So it would have just slipped frictionless straight into the pants. It would have been nothing to hold it.
So I looked down and go, what do? And I pulled out my knife and cut along both sides so all the undies and the poop just fell into the toilet.
It's actually where I now know as a dad, that's often where a lot of dry nights pants. So when you're transitioning from nappies to the pull-up toddler dry nights pants, that's where they undo at the side. You tear them. You tear them at the side, much like I think of Andy sometimes as I'm tearing a nappy of a morning or during the night if it's a bit itchy.
And they marched back commando.
got a rank increase, changed regiments.
So, yes.
Heck of a story. What I've always loved about that is, or even just hearing it now, is that you had to get a corporal or a sergeant. Like it was a high-ranking problem that one of the troops needed to go to the toilet. Like you couldn't just – this was like the military's biggest issue that they needed, like a ranking officer to oversee
peculiar,
shit.
Isn't it? Yeah.
why would you – I understand asking, going, I've got to go and do a poo, but you're in year nine or whatever. Like, couldn't they send a buddy with you and go, oh, we're the military, we kind of came up with delegating.
Yes.
So we're going to send a lower ranking troop to oversee the poo?
From memory, it was in the officer's mess, like where the bathrooms were.
So you could have.
So you needed a higher ranking officer.
To get into the club.
To get in there. And they're all just teachers and older students anyway. So it's
not like they had an M60 in there. That's where the keys to the tank are. Don't let any kids in there.
But I suppose they're just teaching us kind of discipline.
You can't come into this room unless you're being overseen by.
Yeah, respect the upper ranks.
Blows my mind, because wouldn't they have gone, you know, if you're Mr. Stewart by day, the geography teacher, but Major Stewart by weekend when you're on cadet camp, wouldn't you go, hey, I'm sick of these 13-year-olds just coming in here every 5 minutes to shit. I've got to build another toilet.
You probably
dig a latrine.
Yeah, you probably would, but I think...
I bet you that's changed now.
Yeah, you're right.
It's a great re-dive back into that time of your life. Here is something that happened in 2007 on this day, and you'll be blown away that I'm not replaying it. The marathon. November 12th, 2007, I ran a marathon around Albert Park Lake, pretty unfit, quite a chubby guy.
Well, if
never run more than 5 kilometres in my life, really, and then...
It'll come back up and we'll delve deeper into the marathon, because I'd prefer to... go deep in that, because it's fascinating.
Long story, people might have seen snippets of this over the years, like maybe online or something. I think we've done a few, like remember the times. But essentially it was a Friday argument between you and I. I was questioning Katie Holmes's level of bragging about doing the New York Marathon in 5.5 hours.
Well, she said
hours.
She ran a marathon.
She goes, I've run a marathon, I never thought I'd do this.
Five and a half hours, we're like, did you run it?
Yeah, and it was probably a little bit harsh at the time, but you know, we were young and that was the tone. And so... She was like, I've trained for 6 months, whatever. And we're like, hang on a sec. Know nothing about marathons. No. I probably know a little bit more about, basic fitness and training and nutrition and stuff now. But I look back and I was like, 42Ks, almost 6 hours.
Yep.
And I knew that, your general jogging speed, I think walking speed's about 5Ks an hour.
Yeah.
It's like, hang on a sec. You don't think, what were you training for? Like, this just isn't impressive.
So I said to Hayden, if you think you're so good, beat her. As of now, no training. And I think, was it a Monday?
Yeah. So that was a Friday we were making those snide remarks. There's a couple of cocky 26-year-olds. And then
did we go to the races?
Yeah. So that the Saturday in between,
that's
Mike,
not ideal.
Was Derby Day in Melbourne. So part of the Melbourne Cup Carnival.
Yeah.
The Saturday was Derby Day. Mm. I lived in a share house at the time and we all went to Derby Day. We invited everyone back to our house. After Derby Day, had an absolute blinder.
Lovely time, Mike.
Lovely time.
Yep.
At about 4 a.m. on Sunday morning, I suddenly panic and go, oh, shit, I've got to run a marathon tomorrow. Yeah. And then I was like, this is bad preparation. So I walk up to the 7-Eleven near our house and drank about 5 or 6 Powerades, like as many Powerades as I could, to kind of like go, okay, starting from now, I'm hydrating. And then I woke up in the morning and my pillow and my sheets and my bed, everything was saturated. And first I was like, I've wet the bed. I was like, no, I haven't, because I need to go to the toilet and my pillow is the wettest thing.
Yeah.
And I rang a friend of mine who's a doctor and he went, yeah, you've had too much salt. Like you've all the Powerade and all the all the Gatorades you've been drinking, they're to replace lost salts. Yeah. But you haven't lost any. You're like overloaded your body with electrolytes and your body's trying to sweat them all out during the night. So then I was a bit dehydrated on the Sunday, just panicked.
From memory, you just went for a massage. You went for a
2-hour massage at Aurora Day Spa.
he went for a small jog and went, what am I doing? I'm better off just being limber. And so
why tense up the day beforehand? They say you've only got a certain amount of K's in your legs, so you don't want to use them up the day beforehand.
I hope it comes back up, Ham, because I would love to delve deeper into that.
You would remember the guests on that show more than I did.
Tamsin
Lewis. I totally forgot that she was there, so really appreciate Tamsin coming down to run a lap.
Yep. Basically, I was broadcasting while live, and we're trying to time it out where Hayne would either fail or win it.
5:30
at 5:30.
So start at midday, and like hopefully I'm finishing about 5:20. Did it in 5:25, by the way, Mike. Smash Katie home.
Yeah, well she's done. Yeah, she still hasn't reached out to you, and
she never returned serve. No, I haven't seen her run another marathon since. I thought it would become an arms race for her and I approaching the 2 hour theoretical threshold of the marathon. Yeah, like you know. By now, I'd be running a 2:38, then she'd do a 2:31, and we'd be just be getting faster and faster, but she tapped out early.
Yeah, conceded, I suppose.
Good news for us.
So you started running midday. The show started live around the country at 4. I was broadcasting, and because I didn't have a co-host, essentially,
co-host was on kilometre 33 or something at 4 o'clock.
We'd recorded a bunch of stuff on the way around. But, yeah, Tamsin Lewis was a guest.
Shannon Knoll played one bar. It says in the run sheet he played like one verse or one chorus of Lift. I think you drove him out on the golf buggy and drove in front and you were like, I can't remember if this is true or not, but I have a vague memory of you saying he's in a hurry, he can only do like one bar or something of Lift. But again, I look back and go, hats off to Tamsin and Shannon. Like,
thank you so much.
Thank you, so appreciative. Looking back at all the people that have come on the show, you're like, thank you so much for giving up the time to come and do something very dumb often.
I gave Hayne a shot of vodka instead of a shot of water, a cup of water on one lap, which you were angry at the time. Funny in retrospect.
Not very
but,
funny.
But,
the funniest.
But we had to beep out a few.
I think, you know, when you run a marathon, Mike, and one day you may, you really go through ebbs and flows. You go through points where you're like, oh, I've never been this deep into the hurt locker. Mm. And then other spots out of nowhere, suddenly you're kind of euphoric running. And unfortunately, the vodka probably came at it deep in the hurt locker spot.
Yeah, and put you even deeper into that.
Yeah, it's sort of like it was sort of like stranded on a desert island. Mm. The rescue helicopter comes down to land. They dack you. They push you over. They fart in your face. They jump back on the chopper. They fly off. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Here is
what we did in 2009. This is one I want to get to.
Okay.
We'll let you do your business for a sec, Mike.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Quick fun fact before I get to what we're doing. The bus show was the next day. The show where we did the show from the double-decker bus driving around Sydney, or the open-top bus.
Yeah,
fine. That was obviously the 13th of November.
Okay.
But the 12th has a few, you know.
We're doing it tomorrow time.
Just a bit of slow hair clap. We're inviting Fifi Box to come on the bus.
Yeah. You know. The old invites get rolled out again. Essentially, you have a good idea that you look forward to doing and then you just
go, well, that's going to be a fun show. I'm going to get 6 shows of invites out of that. But after this, Ando, I think the first or maybe the second time that we had Ricky Gervais on the show.
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. Mike, get into it. Mike, well done. So 2009 you say? I
2009.
The second time?
Possibly
we had
the second time. I don't know which bit this is because it wasn't detailed in the run sheet.
Yeah.
But I know we had a thing because for people that are fans of Ricky Gervais and early days of the Gervais podcast with Steve Merchant and Carl Pilkington.
And you and I loved it.
Loved it.
Loved
and
it. Carl, in fact, it was their podcast that made us want to get a podcast
it
going.
It sort of made us when we went, oh, okay, maybe, you know, you can do podcasting.
Yeah.
It was like the Carl Pilkington aspect of that podcast where Carl would just come up with weird ideas and they'd pressure test them. We saw a lot of similarities between that and Hogg's Inventions.
Yes.
I don't know if this is the bit, but I remember that was often the kind of thing we did with Ricky was go, well, you've got a Carl, we've got a Hogg's.
I reckon the first time we did that, Ricky absolutely loved it. I remember it being hilarious. I think we tried to recycle a little bit.
I think we did try to resuscitate it the second time and we both felt it didn't go as well. Yeah. So I don't know if we've got the first or the second time, but there might be some Hogg's chat in here.
The 12th of November, 2009.
It's Hamish and Andy driving you home, still joined on the line by the star of the new film, The Invention of Lying, and of course, The Office, Extras, Ricky Gervais.
Last time we had you on the show, we were telling you of our friend, Hogg's, who comes on with inventions. And, and you were talking of Carl, your friend, who has a similar mind. I wanted to get your thoughts on this one. Happened not 2 weeks ago. Hogg's rang the show and said that cookbooks were too hard to understand.
Despite the fact we pointed out that they are presented in a very simple list form.
Yeah. He said cooking TV shows are great, but it's hard to tape them or watch them back, and his TV isn't in his kitchen. So he'd like to invent the cook flip book, where you flip it and it animates how to prepare food.
What, you actually hold it in your hand and it shows you what to do?
For a second how enormous this book would have to be.
Yeah.
To animate.
No, I mean, when you flick a book of 1,000 pages, it takes 2 seconds.
Yes.
So basically, you'd have a book the size of the Old Testament to show someone pouring milk into a saucepan.
That's what we were
saying.
That
would be it.
And he was saying...
That would basically be it.
He was saying, no, it's divided into four slides.
Like four quadrants. On the page. So you look at the top one for dicing the vegetables, then reflip it for like skinning the chicken, then reflip
it.
Yeah,
but that's one recipe. Again, this book, you've got a telephone directory to make beans on toast, and then you've got to buy another one.
His argument was, after 50 goes, you've got your money back. Our argument was, 50 times in, if you don't know how to cook this soup, I'm not sure a cookbook can help you.
But also, think of the book when you're flicking it. It's covered in tomato sauce, pastry, sugar, butter. It won't flick after the second go with hog. It just wouldn't flick. It would just fall onto the floor into one big blob where it's covered in grease.
It'd just jump to the final frame and you just have to assume what happened in the middle.
Yes. Oh, that's an amazing idea.
Well, has Carl thought of anything lately? I mean, I'm sure you're in contact with Carl, like, you know, on a day-to-day basis.
And we don't want to ruin
it. Called him. It's the first phone call of the day. Just called him, yeah.
Did you?
Well, he said interesting the other day that he thinks that lights in fridges added to the obesity problem. What do you mean? He said, well, he said, because normal people eat in daylight hours. He said, but with a light in the fridge, fat people can find food in the middle of the night.
Unfair advantage.
Ricky, we know you have to go. We'd like to finish up. The Invention of Lying, it is an amazing film. It exists in a world where people cannot lie. Human race isn't aware that lying exists. We wanted to finish up. Tell us one thing about yourself. It could be fact, it could be fiction, and we have to discern whether you're lying or not.
Let's see how we go.
I saved Terry Jones from Monty Python. I saved his dog from drowning the other day.
Home?
You're an animal lover. I think that's exactly the kind of thing you do. Although, was it winter? Is it winter where you are?
Not summer.
Well, it's sort of autumn.
Yeah, all right. I think you did that.
Did you do it?
Me and my girlfriend walking along, and we saw this poor little dog being walked, and it was bullied by two Rottweilers, and they scared it, and it fell from a bridge into the river, and people were scared. I was going, well, I'll put them on a lead. I was swearing, and we sort of fished it out and gave it back to the woman, and then I got an email saying, you saved my dog, and it was Terry Jones
from Monty Python.
And, we went out for a meal, and it was amazing. I was rewarded by and
thank God,
the dog you saved was exactly like the king's dog, the king of comedy's dog.
It was Michael Parkinson's budgie. Well done.
I also suddenly realised that this game was sort of pointless, me telling you something that was real, because there's no fun in that. I'm annoyed now at myself.
A much more fascinating
it was a good story.
Story.
I'm glad you didn't twist it just a little bit going, I saved John Cleese's dog. It was actually Terry Jones.
Yeah, exactly. That would have been largely pointless. I'd have gone, no, it was Terry Jones. You went, brilliant. Well done. You did us. You showed us. Yeah.
Ricky, thank you very much. We're over
time. Thank you very much.
Good luck with the film. We think it's tremendous. It's out November 26th.
Getting a full 1 month jump on the Boxing Day rush.
Okay. Cheers, everyone. Go and see the film.
Bye, mate.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you, Australia. Bye.
I loved hearing that back.
It was great.
God, fascinating story. He was so much fun.
He's just a guy that likes doing stuff and he likes chatting.
Yep.
That really was fascinating, wasn't it? I'm glad that he picked a great story.
Yeah, exactly. Much better than a lie. Oh, great remembering.
Oh, thanks, man.
Listener.